You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Stefan Sagmeister. Now we are talking.
Guten Abend. Jetzt gibt es Type Radio.
Now we're talking.
You're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Integrated Conference in Antwerp. It's October 23rd, 2009, and our guest is Stefan Sagmeister. Welcome.
Why, thank you.
Wait, before you ask that, are you still the same religion as 4 years ago?
Yes.
5 years ago.
5 years ago?
Yeah.
What were you then?
I would assume an atheist.
Okay, I'm not, yeah.
Yeah.
And you still have rituals?
Rituals, meaning in general rituals?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've got some new ones. Oh,
new
absolutely,
ones.
Yeah.
Okay. I meditate. That's the ones we like to hear now.
Yeah. I meditate every morning, which I did properly today, actually quite successfully today. I started it in Bali simply out of, seemed like the thing to try out there. For a long time unsuccessfully because I took a couple of classes, if there is such a thing as a meditation class, and didn't really get anywhere. It was basically just sitting around being bored. But I had a good number of friends who I had to squeeze it out that they do meditation. And the initial strand that I had tried was a Buddhist kind of meditation, which turns out to be, for one thing, quite difficult because it all concentrates on the breathing, which in my case, and I would assume in many other people's case, is just not quite enough to keep your mind from chattering happily away. And when the mind is chattering happily away, it becomes boring because basically you're listening to your own mind chatter. And then one of my friends who actually is Buddhist recommended transcendental meditation, which is somehow less religious. I also had a problem with all the religious baggage the Buddhist meditation came with, you know, all the stories about Buddha and if they're supposed to be taken literally or not literally, occupied or maybe even added to my mind's chatter. And when I tried out transcendental meditation, that worked already much better. And then another friend recommended a technique from a American audio engineer who developed, I think in the 70s, something called entrainment, which basically means that you would meditate with headphones on that have various tones in the left and the right side. And the variation is in hertz, so you might have a 90 hertz tone here and a 100 hertz tone there, which makes the brain swing in the difference. So the 10 hertz difference, those brain waves are upped in their altitude. And so in the meantime, of course, I read a good number of things about it. I don't want to get too deep into it, but it helped me that I understand it scientifically and that there was proper research done by Harvard University on how this could work. So this made the whole thing a little bit more palatable to me because, of course, also in Bali, there's a whole bunch of charlatanism and, you know, specifically, you know, new agey Westerners that I always had a difficult time with believing what they said or trying to live into that sort of direction. The results for me were that meditation became much, much easier and that I could really get to a state where my mind is empty and that is very enjoyable.
And what does it feel? What does that feel like?
Well, yesterday at the talk, I showed a quickie animation of a visualization of what's going on in my brain. If I manage to get empty, there is some sort of blue light, almost like if you're inside of a crater, that moves very slowly and that you can watch quite consciously, but there is nothing else going on, meaning no thinking about this person or that person or what I need to do next. So it's as empty as I can get, which is not quite sure how to describe it, a pleasant sensation.
And how long does that last for?
Well, I meditate for half an hour in the morning. And the wonderful side effects, specifically in the beginning, were that in the day after the meditation, certain things looked much better and sounded much better. So I started to listen to music exclusively again, simply because the music sounded so fantastic. Not because I really wanted to, but the music sounded so fantastic that I stopped doing anything else and really just listened to the music. Or if I would take a scooter ride to somewhere, I often felt disappointed that when I actually arrived there, because the ride itself was so enjoyable. Kind of like, I would say the best comparison I could say, it's like being stoned, like smoking marijuana without being stoned. So there is no stoned feeling at all. But for the very, very few of the type radio listeners who ever smoked marijuana, they would know that music sounds better, more enticing. But of course you're stoned. And at least in my case, I'm not particularly hot on being stoned. I'd rather be myself.
Does that also have to do with that you sort of give away the control, and it's like a sort of a fantastic feeling that you're being able to give away the control over your thoughts or what's happening to you, and you just can sit back and enjoy that without being in panic about like, oh shit, I should be in control of what's happening.
Well, this of course would be true during meditation. Mm-hmm. But of course I don't listen to music during meditation. So there are these two things, like during the fact that things look better and the music sounds better would be after the meditation. Mm, right. During the meditation, if I can actually achieve it, it's just emptiness. Now since I'm back in New York since 6 weeks, and it's a different story. It were of course unbelievably busy weeks, and I had a much more difficult time getting there again, simply because there's so much stuff in my head, even when I wake up. And I try not to do anything before I start meditation, so I don't check email or any of that crap. I still find it a good way to start the day. I still try to get up early. That's something, maybe another ritual I took over from Bali. In the center of Bali, most people, for sure the locals, but also the foreigners, tend to go to bed quite early in order to be up for the sunrise. Almost everybody that I knew experienced the sunrise on a daily basis. And it's a lovely way to start the day. Like in my case, you know, just getting up at 5:30, be ready on the couch with a big pot of coffee and, in my case, a cigar or two, and watch the sun come up and kind of plan the day, just then let the mind, you know, wander and plan out what I'm going to do that day is a great way to start the day. And I try to keep that up, not in the much tighter timing of New York, definitely more difficult.
Would you consider moving away from New York? I mean, it is such a contradiction if you compare Bali, I assume.
They are both very enticing. Mm. I'd say, you know, in the last 10 years, I really traveled extensively, you know, probably more than most people that I know. So I've seen many, many places, and I think I have a good comparison there. You know, when you look for an apartment and when you think of moving and you look for an apartment and you might, I don't know, go up on a website and 50 of those places look good, and you look at all 50, even though on the website they all looked fine, there's going to be one or two that just feels right, that you enter and you know immediately this is the right place, just the way the rooms are configured. And in all my travel, there were two places that had that sort of right feeling. And one of them is New York and the other one is Bali, even though they are so different from each other. They're just, both of them have a whole slew of things that I find enticing that make life livable. So I really love them both.
So for your next sabbatical, you would go back to Bali, you think?
Yes, I think I would. And it's very unusual for me, because I was never a go-back tour, meaning I was never really hot on going back to the same holiday place, or just because it was nice in one year, I was always much more prone to check out a new place. Mm-hmm. But for what I wanted to do, meaning do a lot of work, you know, things that we didn't have time for during the regular studio time, and at the same time be in a completely different environment, I think Bali was as perfect as I could hope it would be anywhere in the world. It has that mixture of a sophisticated infrastructure that I would want and need. So there are stores that will sell you printer cartridges, even the ones that you need for your printer. And at the same time, it's a completely intact local society that is very surprisingly untouched by the incredible tourism that happens on the island. This is not true for the whole island, of course, but there were a couple of very smart decisions made in the very beginning so that most of tourism would be featured around the airport. So all the heavy tourism, because the airport is also close to the beach, is really around there. And then there's a couple of other spots throughout the island, but as a newcomer, you completely have the choice of what you want. You can be in the middle of Australian beer bars. You can be, if that's what you desire, you can be in an unbelievable high-end luxury environment and stay at the Bulgari Hotel or one of the Four Seasons. You can be in a completely in the jungle, all by yourself, totally untouched. You can be in a local village where you would be the only and first foreigner ever to be there. Or you can be, like in my case, in a village where there's a good number of foreigners, still quite local, but and only, you know, 10 minutes away from a much larger village where you would have a lot of services, which was turned out to be ideal for me.
Did anybody recognize you there? Did you have... Because I see here everybody seems to, you know, say hello. Well, obviously we're in a design conference.
We're in a design conference, yeah. Yes.
But yeah. Does it happen that...
Yeah, here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but very, very rarely. Yeah. You know, here and there that I'm not in my own village, of course, but let's say that if I'm in Ubud, which is the much larger village, mm-hmm. that there would be, you know, a German design tourist there who says, oh, aren't you Stefan, blah, blah. But very, very rarely.
How do you, in general, how do you perceive your fame, you could say, your rock stardom of graphic design?
Well, I mean, I have a very, very good insight into rock stardom because I worked with a lot of actual rock stars. And from that, I know that the little bit of knownness that you can achieve within the world of graphic design is the absolute ideal situation for me. If I go to something like this, like Integrated, where it's a design conference, I can get a big ego because in spaces like this, really a lot of people know me and come up and, you know, even, you know, sign posters and whatnot. But as soon as I'm out of there, it stops, and it stops pretty much for good, which I think suits my character beautifully. My ego is big enough that I would like that here and there, and not gigantic enough that I would want that on a ongoing basis. Yeah. And I know it from longer conferences, particularly in Asia, where they tend to be very fan-based, much more so than here, you know, where it might be, you know, can I take a photo with you hundreds of times a day?
Really?
Hundreds of times, yeah. In the conference environment, of course. Yeah. And I know from these conferences that I kind of enjoy the first day. On the second day, it starts to go on my nerves. And it happened that on the third day, I didn't go to the conference out of that reason. Mm. Or then really stayed the entire day only in the speaker's room to be sheltered from it. And, you know, we've worked with rock stars that had this entire range of possibilities. Steven Tyler from Aerosmith loves it. You know, he wakes up in the morning and says, fuck, I am Steven Tyler and I'm in Aerosmith and I'm super happy that this is so. Yeah. And more power to him.
He probably walks the streets to run into people who can ask for
He actually goes, I've seen him in New York in full Steven Tyler outfit with the shawls on the street, which of course invites masses of people to come up. And he enjoys it and great. I mean, this is who he is and, you know, fantastic.
Maybe you should find a lookalike. For the third day.
Possibly.
Just for the photo shoot.
Or have like a large cardboard cutout of you.
Exactly.
Like people can take pictures with that.
But there's other people, let's say like Lou Reed, who absolutely hate it. who really are in this business to make music and who hate all the surrounding things, including giving interviews and all that, which is why he has such a bad reputation with journalists, because he really just hates doing it. And I think I would be, not that I am, but I think I would be more in that group. I enjoy it short term, and so for me this is perfect. Yeah, no complaints whatsoever. And this little bit of knownness within the design community comes with a whole slew of advantages. Probably the biggest one is that ability to travel. And the ability to travel to places that might not wind up on my holiday list. But places that are very, very much worthwhile to see and to encounter. But, you know, when it comes to planning your holiday once or twice a year, probably would not be the number one. Maybe Antwerp, falls into that kind of places. It's a gorgeous, beautiful city. And we did have a chance to check through the old town. It's wonderful, fantastic cathedral. It's great to see, but I'm not sure if it ever would have wound up, on the holiday list. So yeah, no complaints whatsoever.
For example, now your talk, you always have a messages of happiness and good, but does that have to do with age also? Is that because you're becoming old? Older, sorry.
I'm 47.
There's a different, I assume a different way of thinking if you're 20 and what you're concerned with.
Yeah, you're probably right. Clearly and hopefully, very hopefully, things that I'm concerned with 47 or when I'm 65 would be different than the things that I'm concerned with 20. This is true for design concerns, including music playing a much bigger role in my life when I was 25 than now. And I think it would be unbelievably sad if it wouldn't be that way. So concerns about, leading a full life are probably bigger now than when I was 20, when, my life trajectory was not of concern at all. I just did things because I did things. And I'm probably more aware of the fact now that whatever I decide to do will allow me not to do something else. So the decision to do something will automatically exclude a lot of other interesting things. And there is, I only have 16 hours every day to do something. So I have to make conscious decisions on what not to do. One of them, for example, is participate in blogs. And it's not because I have a distaste for blogs, not at all. It's just that I know from my friends who are participating in blogs that it's another hour a day. That specifically if you heavily participate, they check what comments or who replied to their entry the day before. And I just don't have that hour. I just don't have that extra hour. Or my hours right now are filled up with things that I find more compelling, or that I think that in my best judgment, I think are more compelling. And I'm very aware how difficult that even is to make judgments on how much I would love things or not love things that I reside upon. But, I think that's human nature.
And overall, what could you say since the first interview that we did in 2004? What is the most significant change in your life and in your design work? In 5 years. Can you pinpoint that?
Well, in my life, significant change for sure that Annie and I broke up. Last time when we talked,
she was there.
I was probably at that point in the middle of a long 11-year relationship that for the most part was wonderful. So that's a significant life change. Mm-hmm. Work-wise, I'm just coming out of the second sabbatical. So we are starting this documentary movie, which hopefully will bring some change with it, both by its subject, but as well as just on a daily work basis. Making a movie is different, also just by the length of it. And
what is the movie about? Sorry, I'm not allowed to.
No, of course. The movie is about happiness. Yeah. So the subject is one that I've been dealt with, but it's a It's supposed to be a documentary for general audience. So while it's going to have heavy design elements in it, simply because I am a designer, and it would be silly of me to leave that behind, considering there is so much I don't know about movie making, that I can, you know, hopefully get all the help, or some of the help that I need from my old profession. But probably the other change is that it's meant to be for a general audience, not particularly made for a design audience. Yeah, I think that's about.
And is the movie going to be sort of a conclusion of a period you just went through? A conclusive documentary? Or is it like part of an ongoing search for happiness?
I don't know. I'm in the middle of writing a script, but it could easily be that I throw the script away again. I'm definitely in a conflict in between doing a planned documentary, which is, I think, called an essay documentary. You know, that's where you basically in the beginning of the movie know what you're going to say and then say that, which from my nature would feel more comfortable to me. And doing an open-ended documentary where you really would know, where you basically just go out and shoot and then see what you're going to have.
Right.
Which is more scary.
More intuitive, too.
Yeah. Allows, of course, for a much bigger, for many more possibilities. And I might also wind up with absolutely nothing.
But that's exciting, no?
Yeah, I'll see what it actually goes. I'll finish a script, or I'll put this, not finish a script, but I'll get the script into a place where it halfway decently works, and then we'll see. And maybe it's a mixture of the two.
Is there a date that you've set in mind?
Yeah, for now we have fall 11 as a release date, fall 2011. Mm-hmm. But if that becomes spring 12, I also have another big problem with it. Yeah.
Shall we say last question? Because
Sure. Well, I have one more. Yeah. In what way have you felt in maybe most in the studio the economic crisis? Have you felt the effects of that?
Well, I'm only back since 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. I've of course been talked to many other designers. In the US, it's very feelable. I mean, you definitely see it in New York just by going around. That, you know, how many stores are closed, how many storefronts have for lease or for sale signs in it, how many even established places that have been around for years, or that I know when they opened, renovated very expensively, are still closed. In places outside of New York, it's even much more feelable. I was in the last 2 weeks in Rochester, New York, and in Memphis, Tennessee, which look terrible. I mean, totally different to what I have observed in the last couple of days, let's say in Munich or in Antwerp, where, you know, people are talking about it here and there, but talking about it more in an anecdotal kind of way. You know, that, yes, they know a friend who got laid off, but their own lives are much less depending on it, or much they feel it themselves much less. And for sure, as a visitor in Munich or in Antwerp, you couldn't tell a thing. I mean, Munich looked to me exactly like it did 3 years ago. Well, in New York, you see the difference hugely. And maybe I see it even more because I was gone the entire year. You know, when I left in September 2008, everything was hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. And so coming back, I see the difference enormously. And in my own studio, it's a bit early to tell. I think that we are probably less prone to it than other studios, mostly because we never grew. So, you know, let's say in 2008, we probably had, for every job that we said yes to, we said no to 9 others, roughly. So there is some way to go from. So we took basically every 10th job on. And I'm sure that we can't be quite as choosy. And I've, in the meantime, talked to a good number of clients who don't seem to be in a huge hurry to have that work done that they said they need when we are back in September. So I can see some sort of a delay in pieces, or, I mean, clearly, you know, we are one of our long-term jobs is a big development in Louisville in Kentucky, a museum that has a whole bunch of other things around it. And that whole place is on hold, just like almost every big real estate connected development is on hold in the United States. I mean, they simply have gigantic difficulties in getting them financed. So I feel it in that way, but not in any threatening kind of manner.
So you were also away during the elections, is that?
Yes.
So is it also visibly a big change?
Well, I'm very glad that I'm mostly out of the Bush-hating discussions, because they became as boring as, I don't know, discussions about the weather or discussions mm-hmm. about airline delays. Oh, they're just done too many times.
General grievances.
You know, the terrible economy, of course, cannot be pinned on the new president. That's, you know, I mean, at least from my point of view, really all the doing of the old president, mm-hmm. who really managed to fuck up pretty much every single direction that you can possibly have an influence, good or bad, as a leader of a country. I mean, if I look at the states, and I think that's the only way you can judge a president, is you look at a country the way it was when he took it over, and you look at it the way it was when he left. And I think on every single measure, be it economic, military, how standing in the world,
diplomacy,
America was significantly worse off than when he took it over. In New York, you know, and there I'm in a somewhat sheltered environment through both administrations. He is very, very popular. I mean, truly popular in my circle, but also popular in the media, as in, you know, the New York Times loves Obama. And I get most of my news from the New York Times. So he's doing very well. Now, if I would watch Fox, which I don't, but if I would, I'm sure I would get a completely different picture.
Now, I was wondering, you said because people generally complain so much and it became so boring. So what do they complain? Do they now talk about more about the weather then? The weather conversations have increased.
I mean, there is here and there an Obama discussion, but at least in my circle, he, you know, has regained his popularity. And of course, internationally, or, I mean, clearly in Indonesia, he's unbelievably popular. You know, also because he grew up there. And I mean, if everybody that I read an interview with in Indonesia who claims he went to grade school with Obama actually went to grade school with Obama, he went to a very large class.
A couple of thousand.
Last question.
How would you like to be remembered?
I think I don't give a shit. I really don't. And I have to say, I'll see. It was very strange. Like, maybe the biggest influence on my designing life was Tibor Kalman. And he, of course, always was about 10 years older than me. And I remember at various parts when we talked about something, he talked about what is interesting to him right now. And I always didn't quite get that. Why would he be interested in that? And as I reached that age, you know, like 10 years later, I suddenly became interested in it. And Tibor, specifically towards the end of his life, was actually interested in his legacy, which was a miracle to me then. And right now, I still don't quite get it. Because, I mean, you're gone. Who gives a shit? But who knows how I feel about that in 10 years? So I might get interested in that. Who knows? But right now, it's that this is not on my mind.
Yeah, we'll come back and ask you in 5 or 10 years.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Type Radio.